This is a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. This is episode 7 from the game. It is Barca 1-2-5.
It's Modric to whip it in!
Gangnam Style. On this week's episode, Anthony Murray and I are joined by Ewan McLean, @ Ewan McLean, if you want to follow him on Twitter. And there is a tiny wee bit of an issue with his Wi-Fi for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes tops, at the beginning of it, and then it all settles down. So if you can just grit your teeth through that wee bit, fantastic podcast discussing one of the most memorable nights that very few of us will ever forget. This is me, Anthony Murray, and Ewan McLean. With Barca 1-2-5.
So we have another episode of the game, and we are joined as usual by Anthony Murray from Bratislava with his up-to-date stuff on the charts and the world of media. How you doing, Anthony?
Brilliant. Very good.
Excellent. And we are joined this week by Ewan McLean. Ewan, how are you?
Very good. I'm getting over some technical difficulties. It's good to be on the podcast, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Great to have you on, and you picked a brilliant game. But before we do that, do you just want to introduce yourself, give a bit of history about who you are as a Celtic fan, and then we can start asking about this particular game and what you were doing?
Yeah, so I think you've said before in tweets, Harry, that this is the podcast for the frustrated, potentially middle-aged Celtic fan. I wouldn't go so far as saying that I'm middle-aged. I'm 26. I've supported Celtic all my life through my dad, my uncle. You know, before this game, I would have had a season ticket and gone all the time with the family. Big deal for us. Would have lived outside of Glasgow at the time and drove in. And around about this time, I would have been 17, just about to turn 18. So this game was Celtic 2, Barcelona 1, the 7th of November 2012. I was due to turn 18 on the 8th of November 2012, and I remember it being a very, very exciting week in the build-up. I think also an exciting time in my life as a Celtic fan because, you know, I was just started university at the time in Glasgow. I'd moved through. I had this amazing experience of being able to walk to Celtic Park, this novelty. So it was a great time for me to be a fan. And I think this game, you know, it's a good one to come on and talk about because it's probably one of the best results in our history. To be at it, it's an absolute privilege. So, yeah, that's probably the best way to kind of sum up where I was at that point and just the whole excitement around it for me. I was basically a child, you know, or at least a kid and going to these games. And I think the experience that I had growing up with Celtic in Europe was one of, we competed with everybody. You know, we didn't lose heavily in many games, if any. You know, when I was growing up in the early 2000s with Martin Neal, Strachan. So you had that expectation. But prior to this game, we'd be kind of out of the fold for a few years with Mowbray in the early Lennon years. So there wasn't too much expectation with this Champions League campaign, but we definitely defied that expectation. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Okay, so tell us a wee bit more about your life then. So you just come through to Glasgow. So tell us about the day, everything you were doing. Obviously, this game's particularly famous because it's around our 125th birthday. We had the Mass the night before, and we had the amazing Tifo. So just talk about the day at the time and everything about it.
So I think on the day, I would have had classes and stuff. So I would have been in, but wouldn't have been interested at all, particularly on that day, just looking.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. What were you studying?
I'm a pharmacist, so pharmacy.
Right, okay, carry on.
It's not very exciting, so there you go.
No, it's okay. Pharmacy and certainly chemistry, when I was at school, went straight over my head. So you're a more sophisticated man than me in that subject. And of course, you're one of the most important working groups on the planet at the moment. So who are we to denigrate a pharmacy degree? So carry on.
we're definitely very valued at the moment. We need to be here, there and everywhere. But yes, I was studying pharmacy. I had classes that day. At the time as well, I lived in halls in uni. I had a flat with five guys, you know, the way you would normally do. And not one of them was interested in football to any degree, which was not great for me in terms of the build-up. And of course, I was 17, so I couldn't until the next day after the game go for a legal pint. And I didn't have an ID at the time, so it was a bit of a pain for actually going out for a pint before it. And I used to go to the games with my uncle, and he would drive in and meet him, so there was no chance of going for a pint with him. So kind of on that day, I remember sitting in the flat, and I managed to convince one of the boys to have a few beers with me, and kind of... essentially, the most of the atmosphere that I got and the build-up that I got for the game was on the walk up to Parkhead, and that was still pretty new to me because we've been driving in, and we'll talk about the game itself and the atmosphere, but the actual walk-up, I don't know if you guys, you will have obviously experienced this, but the walk-up for me, I used to walk up from, you know, like in a Calton end of the town up towards Parkhead, and you just, the numbers, you know, the bigger the numbers got, the bigger the game on that walk, obviously, and with 60,000 in the stadium, you kind of got that sense of the atmosphere, so... That was great, but there was no pre-match painting or anything like that. At least not for the next couple of weeks. But yeah, that was kind of the sense of the atmosphere that I got in.
So where were you sitting at the game?
Jockstein Lawn. So I remember this game very well, and I remember specifically, you know, Tony Watt, you know, had when we get to that goal, him drilling the shot, and I'd have been behind the goal. So yeah, I was sitting there with my uncle, and yeah, he was late, but that's where I would have sat. And I had the, you know, at the time you would have. Well, even now, you get the three-game match package. So I'd sat there for Benfica at home, and I would have sat there for the Spartak game a couple of weeks later. So, yeah, Jockstein Lawn.
So, did you have any knowledge in advance that there was going to be the big tifo that we had at the game? Were you looking forward to that? Because one of the strange things, actually, about those of us that were at this game, we don't see the tifo because we're behind it. Hold it up.
No, well, this is the thing. So I think even then there was probably less social media, so you would have had Twitter and things kicking about then. But I had absolutely no idea about the TIFO. I think I maybe would have, I'm trying to think back, I maybe would have heard of Radio Scotland or something that was something planned for the 125th anniversary. But I didn't know it was happening. But I just earlier today I'd watched the game back, and I'd looked through my phone as well to see if I had any photos of the TIFO or anything from where I was sitting. I've got four or five photos and videos of this incredible TIFO. So I'd have been, I don't know how, if you remember the TIFO well, but it was the big kind of red cross. I'd have been kind of to the side of that. So I wasn't aware of it. So when it was absolutely incredible, obviously when you're in the stadium, but you don't see it, do you, when you're part of it, because you're holding up that wee bit of green or that wee bit of red or white to show it. But I've thankfully got the photos to look back on. They're something special.
So, Anthony, do you want to set the scene in terms of the culture and what the world was like at this particular time, nine years ago?
I just want to make a quick comment that it's great that Ewan attended it with his uncle. This is the first month I've left Scotland. I literally left on the 1st of November. So I went to the last game, which was a home defeat against Kilmarnock. You know, my last ever game as a Glasgow local. And we got beat by a goal by Killian Sheridan. So I kind of left with my head down, you know, thinking, all right, you know, it's over, it's behind me. And then, of course, I actually spent a month in Belfast and was teaching English. And I kind of fell in with this group of economic migrants, like Spaniards and Italians, that I was teaching. But, you know, they were all graduates and stuff. And they kind of invited me out. Obviously, I was the most charismatic teacher in the room. You know, so they bonded with me, and they invited me out to watch the game. So I watched it with a bunch of Barcelona fans in a quasi-neutral pub in Belfast. You know, I wasn't really, you know, confident enough to cheer goals, really. Mm-hmm. But then when you go and beat Barcelona, you know, try and stop me, you know. Anyway, the historical situation of the game at the time. The day before this game was played, Barack Obama gets sworn in for the second time. I didn't know that. I'd forgotten that. There's a big earthquake in Guatemala. A bunch of people die. Pretty sad. Beyond that, not a lot happens this week, historically. Culturally, it's more interesting. A couple of films are out. There's a film called Flight, Denzel Washington, alcoholic pilot movie.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah, I went to see that.
All right. Decent movie. Right. Yeah. And the week after, Steven Spielberg's Lincoln comes out, which I don't know. It might have been interesting, but it wasn't the most exciting Spielberg film that ever came out. And the sequel to Twilight, young adult readers and fans might have been enthused by that romantic vampire saga. The second one of them came out. Music, number one is Robbie Williams. So any listener that bought a Robbie Williams record ever, I don't know, go and stare at yourself in the mirror. What were you thinking? Number five in the chart.
Sorry, what was he number one with? Do you know?
It's called Candy.
I could guess this, I reckon. Is it Candy?
Candy, it was. I don't remember that at all.
Nope.
Neither, I don't really either, but I think around about that time it was out. And I don't think it's overly great, but there you go.
Number five in the charts is Skyfall by Adele. You know, James Bond song.
Oh, right, yeah.
Most people will have fond memories of. Number seven, Gangnam Style, which I listened to before the show. It stands up. Gangnam Style's an absolute masterpiece. One of the great songs.
Is that not a song with like a billion views on YouTube? Yeah.
Yeah, it was like the first YouTube video to hit like, I know, yeah, like a billion or a trillion or so. It's, most of them were me, granted. And I'm still listening to it. Later down in the charts, further down the charts, there's a Taylor Swift song called We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, which I draw attention to because we could make two jokes out of that. It could be about, you know, Celtic and Neil Lennon now, or relating it to this game, the idea that Celtic ever meet Barcelona in a Champions League tie ever again after last week's results. Are we ever getting back together with our friends from the Camp Nou? I don't know. But that's the situation in the world at this point.
Right, so that's the situation in the season. We beaten Helsinki home and away in the Champions League qualifiers, and we beat Helsingborg home and away in the Champions League qualifiers. So not a bad start to European campaign, but we have an incredibly tough group to get into the Champions League that we get in the Champions League with Spartak Moscow, Benfica, obviously Barcelona, because that's this game, and ourselves. So pretty tough group that, spoiler alert, we actually get out of the group. It's amazing. We finish second in the group, Ada McGeady at Spartak Moscow and all. So that's the context to this game. So the Celtic team, do you know, have either of you two know the team off the top of your head? Because the thing that really, really strikes me is on this Celtic team is how weak the bench is. Do either of you know the bench or know the team?
I've got the team written down. Yeah. And the team's pretty iconic. The team, you know, for a certain generation, this will be our Lisbon team. You know, we'll remember the whole 11. But it is an odd 11 when you look at it because of the, you know, we've basically two right backs, you know, a centre half playing centre mid, a striker that was completely irrelevant in the context of Celtic's history. You know, it really is a mixed bag.
The thing about that team is, I think, you know, you've got four first-team players missing, so you're thinking about James Forrest wasn't there. I can't remember the reasons why. There was no Gary Hooper. There was no Izaguirre. Scott Brown, I think, had pulled out that morning. I think he had some sort of illness, so he wasn't around. So the first 11 is, well, it's a bit unconventional, and I think, you know, you've got players kind of shuffling around. You've got Mulgrew on the left side of midfield. You've got Miku, as you said, Anthony, who stuck around for 11 games, said didn't like it, and then went away again. Good luck to him. And then the bench, I think, as you said, Harry, was a particular, when you look back at that bench, and I think particularly when you compare the benches of the team too, it's actually remarkable, the difference in quality. I think on our bench we had, is it Dylan McGeoch, we've got Paddy McCourt, we had Tony Watt, who always comes on to have some impact. We've got Beran Kyle, and the one that stuck out to me name-wise was John Heron. I think, I don't know if I'm correct in this, but I think he played a couple of games for the first team and then headed off. He didn't feature in this game, but he's relevant this week, isn't he, at the time of recording, because he was playing now for Larne, I think, in Northern Ireland, and they had a huge result last night in Europe against a team from Denmark. So good on you, John Heron, if any of your listeners, family listen, but the difference in quality of the benches is absolutely stunning.
It is. It's, I mean, that was the thing that really struck me when I looked into this, was just our bench. It's, I mean, we know that Tony Watt came off the bench, but that's it. I mean, that's pretty much our bench is Tony Watt, perhaps Kyle, but McGeer, Heron, McCourt, Ryan Fraser, and Lucas Zaluska as the goalkeeper. It was a nothing bench that we had, as you say, Ewan. Part of the reason being we had so many players not available, first team players. Although it was only four, but you put those four into the first team, and suddenly four players out of the first team go into that bench, and it's a very different bench. So you two have watched the game recently. So Anthony, take us away with Ewan talking through the match.
Well, I mean, as I should have written down the famous statistic, isn't it? This is one of the famous games where we surrender possession. In theory, deliberately, to try and, I don't know, park the bus, I guess, and just see if we can withstand Barcelona's onslaught. Obviously, Barcelona at this time, maybe just on the decline from one of the greatest club sides in the history of the game. David Villa is sitting on the bench, so you've got a front three of Pedro, Messi, and... oh God! I should have written it down.
Alexis Sanchez,
like what a player! He would go on to be at Arsenal and at Udinese prior. So you've got three absolute superstars up front. Xavi still starting. Iniesta. The interesting ones: Alex Song. They've just signed Alex Song from Arsenal, who would have a really disappointing Arsenal career, Barcelona career, having moved there. So I guess if you were trying to single out where did this decline start? Maybe it was that signing, and maybe it was this game where we managed to bloody their nose. But right from the start, in the seventh minute, Messi skies one over. And even before that, Foster had made a save. Alex Song gets a yellow card in the 12th minute, which maybe allows our midfielders a little bit more freedom in the centre of the park, where we have Wanyama and Mulgrew. And Ledley really putting in a shift. This whole result relies on guys just busting their ass. It's not a game where Celtic play brilliant football in any stretch of the imagination. It's a game where 11 guys working their asses off, try and cover up as many corners as they can and make as many blocks as they can, and allow for Foster repeatedly making saves. But yeah, the notes on the match from a Celtic point of view are just, Mulgrew makes a block, Matthews makes a block, Foster makes a save, and then we get lucky when Xavi and Messi smash shots over the bar, and then we manage to get to the 21st minute, and then Mulgrew takes a corner on the right. I'll let Ewan take over from there.
Yeah, it was good this to be brought in the 21st minute, and I think that's really, I think when you watch these games back from years back, you wonder if your powers of recollection are actually that good. So watching it back, it's quite interesting to see if what you thought happened is what actually happened. I think one thing I've forgotten about the goal, prior to getting the corner, I think Ambrose knocks off somebody, goes out for a corner, but Victor Wanyama bursts through the middle of the pitch and kind of works it wide and ends up winning a throw. Off Jordi Alba, and I just want to say that watching this game back, Wanyama was the best player in the park that night. He was absolutely phenomenal, not just physically, but in possession. He was controlled, he kept the ball when he had to, he was extremely calm, and just absolutely bruised their midfield, which was insanely talented. So anyway, the goal, Mulgrew is a corner, and you can tell that Celtic have probably worked on this, or at least they know about it, and it's something that you would probably have identified between the two scores and the two starting 11s is that Celtic are a big, physical, imposing team, lots of height all over the pitch at full-back, even in midfield. And Barcelona were very, very small, and their only player of any significant height, Gerard Piqué, was actually on the bench. I think Puyol was injured. So what happens is Mulgrew whips it in with his left. Wanyama starts in the middle of the penalty area, but he peels back round and he pins Jordi Alba at the back post. Barca aren't really marking anybody, and once he's pinned him, it's a goal. It's a very powerful header. just past Victor Valdez. And at that point, obviously, delirium, pandemonium in the stands, a bit of disbelief, but also something to hold on to. And I think, you know, scoring that goal at that time, I think gave us real relief. Because as Anthony said, you know, it was a lot of harrying. It was a lot of riding your luck in terms of the chances they had, the saves that Forster made. But once you get that goal, you've got that belief, haven't you? So it was a well-worked goal. And I think the thing I would say as well, prior to the goal, that we were hanging on a bit, and we did, you know, have to rely on some last-ditch defending and feeling the crosses. But we were a threat. We started with two up top. You know, you had Miku and you had Samaras, you know, running in the channels. Talked about how Song was booked. You know, Song had a horrible game. He should have been sent off. I'm sure we'll talk about that later on. But he was all over the place in that midfield. But Miku composed, Samaras ran the channel. He did carry a threat. And once we got that corner, it was good to get that first goal.
How did you react, Anthony, in your bar in Belfast?
I'm pretty sure I went nuts. But it was almost a shock, you know, because I told the Spanish lads that Wanyama was the guy. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, Wanyama had been in the team for 12 months by this point, and anyone with half a brain could see he was basically the beating heart of the side and certainly physically our biggest threat. So I told them that we had this guy that, you know, if he plays well, we, you know, we humbly have a chance. And they all kind of, you know, looked at me when he scored the header. I was like, oh, you were right, you know. But whilst fully, smugly confident that they were going to come back and shellack us in the second half. But there definitely was a few funny looks as I jumped up and down. I think one of the lads might have been a Real Madrid fan, so he, you know, he was in on it as well. But yeah, we certainly made a noise.
The thing about it, Ewan, there's an element when we celebrated of disbelief, but at the same time, we had come close in the Nou Camp. It had only been a 2-1 defeat, and yeah, we'd taken the lead across there. And the, you know, it can be criticism of Lennon for various things of his managerial career, but on this occasion, playing Adam Matthews as left back because Messi plays on the right and cuts inside, and so to have a guy who's comfortable cutting inside seemed to be working. And certainly, as I say, we'd done a creditable performance the game before in the Nou Camp. So were you in complete disbelief, or did you think, well, maybe? What were you thinking, Ewan?
I think disbelief's probably the wrong word, actually, to be fair, because I think you're right. You know, with the game in Barcelona, you had that 2-1 very narrowly beaten. So they had a formula that worked, didn't they, in terms of defending very, very well and breaking and using set pieces. So perhaps not disbelief, but I think still, with that long in the game to go, it would have been scored in the 21st minute. You know, we'd been there before and we had lost out narrowly. So I think the thinking was, we've got this goal, there's some belief there. But, you know, I think as a fan as well, I think I, at that point, when I was that age, was just excited to have a moment like that in Parkhead where the noise was that level. You know, it was so supercharged. It was just, you know, you get lots of cliched stuff about the atmosphere in Parkhead, and I think it's certainly not what it was those years ago. But, you know, just the sheer noise, you're just happy to have that. But yeah, I see you're probably right. Disbelief is probably not totally spot on. And I think there was, after we got that goal, some belief that we could get a result in the game.
I think I'd like to throw a special mention to Mulgrew's corner, because it was probably the run of form in the Celtic team where he was at his best. And when you got a corner kick on the right, you know, I remember joking about it at the time, it was like a penalty. Do you know what I mean? You just assumed we were going to get a goal because Mulgrew had a lovely left foot, and he really could whip them in, you know, with a nice shape. You know, it wasn't, I know this one was kind of dropping in at the back post, but, you know, it was always threatening. You know, he really was good at taking those dead balls, and it's not like he was the greatest, you know, on this occasion, midfielder in the world, but it was a day where, you know, he'll have that memory till the end of his days, where the night he went out and bust his ass at Celtic Park against Barcelona and got an assist and ultimately did everything that you dream of a Celtic fan doing in that situation. So and like I say, over that whole Champions League run, Mulgrew was good. So I think that was really cool that he made the goal on this occasion.
And that's something that I know someone I know who does stuff with Celtic. That's one of his comments about Mulgrew. The sort of unsung part of Mulgrew was particularly around this time, his point is he was great at closing down space. When we were playing teams that are better than us, when we were playing in this Champions League run, Mogru was great at shuttling around and stopping the other team playing just by being in the space.
Yeah. I thought he was exceptional that night. I think you could say that about a lot of them. And I think just the kind of shape of the team too, he's a tactically intelligent player, isn't he? I think he's now back at Dundee United, Mulgrew.
Yeah.
This season, so hopefully he does well this season, but not against us. And you know, it was quite clear that, you know, the pattern of the game even before the goal was Celtic were happy to concede the flanks and the wide areas. And the theme of the game as it went on, we'll talk about that, is that, you know, crosses came in from wide from Alves and Alba, and Celtic kind of sit there in that rigid 4-4-2 and didn't allow for much through the middle. But, you know, we'll talk about after the goal between now and half time. But I wanted to make special mention, I think it's around about the half hour mark after we've scored that goal, we're in that position. Fraser Forster makes an absolutely incredible save from Messi, which at the time behind the goal that Messi took the shot into, I hadn't appreciated that he got the touch, because I don't know if you guys know the chance that I'm talking about. Anthony probably does if he's watched it back, but they've not been able to work the ball wide and get crosses in, so they just do what Barcelona do and whip it in quickly through the middle. It's Messi to Iniesta, back into Messi's feet, and before the Celtic can get a block in, you've got this quick shot from Messi, which is, it's going in, you know, it's going under the bar after about half an hour, and Forster gets his fingertips to it, and just at the time of recording, you know, we're in a position Celtic where we've not got that goalkeeper that can make that sort of save anymore. And I think, you know, it's a different game if that goes under the bar rather than over it. And it's just an absolutely incredible save that sets the precedent for the rest of the game for Forster.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. In that, you know, some of the chances, obviously when Barcelona make as many chances as they do in this game, not every time does a player, you know, catch a shot flush and, you know, force the great save. But that's the first one where it's on target, you know, it's coming off the laces, you know, it's going to burst the net. And Forster really does make the difference. And Forster was such a, you know, for me, you know, he's the great Celtic player of my lifetime. A great Celtic goalkeeper of my lifetime. And this was an occasion where he showed the world and he showed Europe how good he was.
So we're one goal up. It's 21 minutes into the game. We've done the tifo. We've done the we're the greatest fans in the world bit. We've done the isn't our atmosphere amazing? You know, the tick list of an incredible Celtic European night. So Anthony, take us through on this tick list of what a fantastic night. There's a history about this club. We the Cavaliers, etc.
There's, I mean, obviously our history is an attacking club, so we need to try and lean into it where we can. It's not, you know, slim pickings, you know. Matthews has a decent break up the left, but in true, you know, right footer playing down the left style, you know, he tries to cross it with the outside of his right boot. And not in the expert way of Lubomir Moravcik, more in a what else can I do here kind of way, and Samaras doesn't get to it. But beyond that, it's there's not a lot happening. It's shots in on Forster. It's Xavi smashing one over the bar. A good Sanchez header. Sanchez has a great header that misses just. We're working hard. But the great thing is getting to half time, and you know, allowing ourselves a sort of mini respite and 15 minute celebration of the result at that point. Which must have been brilliant for everyone that was there.
Yeah, Ewan, what were you thinking at halftime? Were you sitting down in disbelief? Were you high as a kite? Where were you in this one?
Yeah, I think you're high as a kite. I think it's a huge thing to get in at halftime with a lead, isn't it? Because, you know, I think talking about the game 2 weeks previously in Barcelona, that was what we failed to do. You know, we had that lead over there, and then they score an absolutely fantastic goal by Iniesta right in the stroke of half time. You go in at 1-1, and then it's a real uphill battle to stay in it for the rest of the second half. But no, I think, you know, thinking back to it, I think we, not that we looked comfortable because we were conceding a lot of chances, but there looked like there was a lot of belief within the team that they were doing the right things, you know, forcing the ball wide, trying to be direct when we had the ball. So when it got to half time, I think, I remember speaking to my uncle and saying that we'd get half a chance here, but I think he was of an opposite opinion and thought we probably would eventually concede. And we'd actually spoken about the bench at halftime too, the fact that they had so many ways that they could change things to make it even more difficult for us. But I think there was a real positive attitude at halftime, and the atmosphere was absolutely remarkable. Like, I think, you know, having been to games that we've had in Europe over the years, Man United at home with an Nakamura free kick, that was the loudest I've ever experienced Parkhead to this day. It was just remarkable. So you just felt there might be something in it for us that night. It was just going to be one of those nights, perhaps, you know, where we've got a goalkeeper who's in superhuman form. We've got, you know, a team that, you know, seems to know how to grind out these results potentially, and I just felt like it might be the perfect kind of recipe for it. So I think at halftime, really happy and positive, but thinking about the threat that they still had too.
We need to give your uncle a name check. You can't just call him uncle all the time.
I told him I was doing this today, Harry, and he said don't. So I have to call him uncle. He said he doesn't want to be named. He's very shy. I'll just say he's called Brian. There we go.
I should
mention that I meant to mention earlier when I was saying that I'd left the country, my nephew was at this game, aged like 7 or 8, you know, so I leave the country having never witnessed such a brilliant result, and my cousin or nephew walks into the stadium and gets to say for the rest of his life, I was there the night Celtic beat Barcelona. His name's Isaac.
Isaac's a lucky boy.
Yes, very.
I think the thing about that too is that once you're actually in the lead, you feel, you know, sometimes you feel like, oh, you can relax and enjoy it because we've not been embarrassed. We're not 2 or 3 down at half time to this, you know, remarkable football team. But really what happens is the opposite effect occurs and you just become sick with nerves and think, oh my God, we might actually do this. We might win this game and, you know, we might hold on to this. And it just becomes even more heightened in terms of the anxiety around it. So I think that was probably the feeling that I had too. I thought we might actually win this. This could be utterly historic. I really hope we can hang on to it. But yeah, I think, you know, the rest was history, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, Anthony. You need to talk us through one of the most famous goals ever by a young Celtic striker. That increasingly, as this second half is going on, once we get back in, there is that feeling within you of, oh, please don't blow it now. Please allow us at least a draw here, because this is an incredible performance, an incredible result. So talk us through this second half of increasing anxiety, Anthony. Which I watched the game on full during lockdown. I think BT Sport showed it, and I had sweaty palms even watching the replay when I knew the result. So talk me through it.
Ewan made the good point earlier where he discussed how Messi was. You know, you're trying to take on Matthews, and you very quickly see in the second half how they adapt to get, I guess Messi probably falls in one or sneaks in one, and it's all about Alves, you know, overlapping, and the second half highlights are just, you know, it's just all Alves really, and Alves is playing in the Olympics for Brazil right now as an old man. You know, he really was one of the great right backs in football history, you know, and part of that Barcelona team. And so he's just getting space and getting balls in. But, you know, Matthews is making tackles. Forster's making saves. Ricochets aplenty. There's one that is really terrifying where in the 55th minute where Messi, you know, gets it on his left foot in what I would call John Collins territory. Other people might have different terminology. But it's one of those ones where he curls it and he just doesn't get enough on it. And Forster makes it look really easy. You know, it's not one of the spectacular dive saves. He just, you know, he just steps right and catches it. And that, just, you know, that really gives some belief to the fact that, right, he isn't, you know, I mean, he is brilliant, but he isn't a magician. He's not going to, you know, stick it in the top corner every time. And on this occasion, you know, we're getting it. Forster's getting the better of him. There's a great double save from Sanchez. Mulgrew actually has a chance, a header that he should do better with. There's a wonderful moment where Wanyama skins Mascherano in the box, but then when he gets onto the sort of byline, he just tries to roof it from an impossible angle, and he probably hit you in the nose, Ewan, with the ball on that occasion. There's the moment where Song should get sent off in the 67th minute, but he doesn't, so it should have been his... Had he got a second yellow earlier, this is his second, what should have been his second yellow, but he gets away with it. And, you know, we're obviously a bit pissed off about that. 69th minute, Forster makes save for Messi. 67th minute, or 76th minute, Iniesta skies a good chance. There's an interesting thing. In the 82nd minute, Messi gets a free kick. And if anyone's really studied Messi's career, you know, he was always obviously a good free kick taker, but he became arguably the greatest free kick taker of all time in the last 3 or 4 years, where he really, you know, honed his craft and started scoring with a regularity that would put him in that conversation. On this occasion, he tries to sneak one round the back, you know, sort of round the outside of the wall, and Foster reads it. So again, it's just Foster growing with confidence. And then, yeah, basically in the same minute, you know, that leads to, you know, a hoof up the park, the greatest midfielder in history, Xavi, you know, misjudging a header, and the ball bobbles through for our substitute young striker, Tony Watt. And I'll let Ewan describe that moment.
Yeah, well, can't even put it into words how it felt at the time. But even before that goal, it's a good summary of the second half, Anthony. And I think, you know, I agree, it was just lots of Dani Alves crosses, wasn't it? And quite aimless ones at times, you know, going out of play. It was kind of very unlike him. I think he is the most decorated, you know, footballer of all time. I think with major trophies, and it's like 40 trophies he's won in his career or something like that, like major trophies as well. He's incredible and he's still going, as you say. So, yeah, I think that was it. You know, Song should have been off. He definitely should have. He had two yellow card defences in the first half. He had a third in the second. The referee still wouldn't send him off. You had that Mulgrew chance as well, obviously. And then with the goal, yeah, I think Messi's got better at free kicks as his career's gone on. But it's actually, the kind of recollection of it is that it's a poor kick out from Forster. So he kicks it out as if we're going to try and break. And I don't know why he's not slowing the game down. You know, we're 1-0 up against Barcelona, 82nd minute. We've had a free kick. It's right into his hands. He's got a hold of it. And he tries to start a breakaway against them when he should just hold on to the ball. So anyway, he punts the ball down the middle of the pitch. And Xavi goes with a lazy leg in the middle of the park, completely misses it. And Tony Watt's in. And it's all happened extremely quickly. It's you can tell with the TV feed as well. It's seconds by the time it obviously leaves his boot and Tony Watt's bearing down and goal. And I think it's Mascherano who's trying to get across. And I remember sitting behind the goal so well because I'm looking through it. You know, I'm looking through the goal at Tony Watt and Mascherano side by side. And Mascherano's coming across. You can just tell he's not going to get there. Do you think, don't take another touch. Don't take another touch. Just hit this as hard as you can and keep it low and try and go back across the goalkeeper towards where I'm sitting. If you do that, it's a goal. And as soon as he hits the ball, it's going in because Valdez can't get back over to his right-hand side to get anything on it. And from that point on, that's the noise at that point is just completely out of this world. I mean, it was absolutely transcendent. I mean, think you can talk like, you know, football is and these kind of moments are not that special in the grand scheme of life, but really, come on, this was unbelievable. And this is probably where I would use disbelief because Tony Watt, you know, he was 18. He was signed from Airdrie for $50,000. I think Lennon said after the game they brought on Fabregas and David Villa. I brought on an 18-year-old kid who was worth $50,000. And for me, I was going to be turning 18 the next day. So from a personal perspective, you could totally relate to this footballer who's come on and did this thing that is going to define him for the rest of his career and, you know, potentially his life. And I think it has kind of gone with Tony Watt wherever he's gone, hasn't it? They go against Barcelona and perhaps he's not been the player that we'd hoped in terms of his career. But yeah, I think when that ball hits the back of the net, it's complete chaos. You know, there's bodies going everywhere, people flying down, you know, rows of stairs towards us, towards the ball. And he goes off to the right to celebrate. And it's just incredible. And I think at that moment too, you think we can win this. You know, we probably needed the second one to know we were going to win this game, but we can win this with the 2-goal leads with 8 minutes to go and the noise for the rest of the game until, you know, the third goal in the game is incredible as well.
You'd mentioned earlier, Anthony, about people putting bodies on the line. And one of the things I remember about both this game and the game before in the Nou Camp, at the time, it's amazing. This was everybody thought Ambrose was a decent player until he was rushed back for the Juventus game and cost us that game. I always thought Kelvin Wilson was just an average English Championship centre half, but both of those players in these two games seem to have an amazing ability to leap from a standing start to clear things, particularly Ambrose. That's one of the abiding memories I have of it. And you're right, Ewan, on when the ball broke to Watt, I was the same as you. So I'm in the north stand upper, just opposite the the tunnel, and so I'm sort of diagonally in line with it. And I remember as it's coming through to him and dropping to him, I remember just thinking, just hit this across the keeper and keep it low, and I think you will score. And he did, you know, because the many times you've seen strikers, you think, oh no, he didn't, he do it, he took an extra touch or whatever. He just kept it low, and as you see, the bodies were going everywhere, and it was just one of the most incredible goals to celebrate I've ever celebrated inside Celtic Park. How was the bar in Belfast, Anthony?
I think it was a situation where even probably the most ardent stabby Hun would have just shrugged and said, all right, you know, let him have his moment, you know, because this is a once in a lifetime event. You know, this is absolutely unbelievable that Celtic have just extended a lead against, you know, the best team on the planet. I'd seen Tony Watt playing for the youth team, and remember he'd come on his debut and scored a couple of goals, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there was that excitement, there was that belief that, all right, you know, this young lad's going to kick on and become a great Celtic striker. So with that momentum, you know, he was full of confidence, and it was so good for him to score such a lovely goal. You know, it was a great finish. You know, he just threw 1-on-1 and buried it. Didn't overthink it.
Well, you mentioned even the biggest Rangers fan would have been saying, oh, let him have his moment. And one of the things I remember about this in the aftermath of it was this game had been five lives chosen live commentary, Celtic Barcelona, Celtic's 125th birthday. Even Alan Green, England supporting Northern Irishman Alan Green, when you listen to the commentary back, he patently is sounding overjoyed at this goal and caught up in the emotion of the moment. So yes, I think you're right, Anthony. Even the biggest Rangers fans would have allowed us a moment of celebration at this point. So how are you and your uncle doing, Ewan?
Yeah, no, before I even tell you that, I think you're talking about commentary. You said Alan Green's commentary was very pro-Celtic. I'm just looking at kind of YouTube stuff associated with this game, there's a really good clip that I'd been previously unaware of, which is Radio Scotland's commentary of the game, and I think it's Liam McLeod, who'd probably still do it now. I don't know if you're aware of the one I'm talking about, but
I am. Yeah, I think the audio was on a podcast I did a wee while ago.
Is that right? I mean, that is absolutely phenomenal commentary. Like just the all of it. You know, I think it's about a 20-second clip or something, but it totally encapsulates the atmosphere. Like, you know, the gasp as the ball goes through to Watt, and people realise he's in. You know, he's in. He can score here. And then the sound of it hits the back of the net. I would just, if anybody listening to this, go and seek that YouTube clip out. It's just, it'll take you right back to that moment. But yeah, myself and my uncle are just absolutely overjoyed. You know, it's just complete chaos. And I think, you know, that kind of time is up. It's a little bit of a blur, isn't it? Because you're just so high in adrenaline, you know, with that ball going in the net. But at this point too, it becomes even more important that you don't throw the result away. You don't give them that goal or give them a chance of getting back into it. Because, you know, these players are very, very capable, you know, in the Barcelona team. And I think one thing I would have picked out from watching the game back is that Barcelona team, if they had made the subs, bringing on Fabregas and David Villa maybe 10 minutes earlier even, they did have a grip on that game, probably as we get tired as well, but they were starting to kind of create chances. I think just after the goal as well, there's a decent header chance for Pedro that gets blocked by Wilson, but we're just, you know, on the edge of our seats hoping that we can see this through, the same as every single one of the people around us, you know. So, yeah, it was just hoping that we could hold on and avoid conceding two.
So you know a Champions League game's going to have 4 or 5 minutes injury time, Anthony. So talk us through these final buttock-clenching, stomach-churning, high as a kite and sick as anything final 10, 12 minutes.
Obviously, it would have been a long between the goal in the 82nd minute and the final whistle in the 94th. That's probably the longest 12 minutes in Celtic's history, or up there. Pedro had the header, that Wilson makes the block. Iniesta has a chance, but he kind of puffs it. You know, he doesn't bury it like he would have on a good day. David Villa, absolute genius footballer, one of the greats. Is on at this point, and he snatches a chance and doesn't finish it. Ultimately, they do pull one back in the 90th minute. Forster makes a save, you know, good enough we think, but it spills to his left, and of course Messi is in there to bury it. You know, still eager to get the points. You know, like they need it. You know, like they need, like they can't let us have it easily. So you have to applaud them. They keep going, and then it's just, you know, yeah, it's just, it's people getting in front of the ball, doing everything they can. Biram Kayal has come on by this point for Samaras. But ultimately, it's, yeah, it's just all hands to the pump. And ultimately, you know, by the 94th minute, we hear that glorious final whistle, and we've done it.
Was there not another moment when Tony Watt was through?
Yeah, there is, isn't there? I think it's about the 87th minute or something like that.
Yeah, and he goes for it. Does he try to get the foul or
that? Right. One of Mascherano,
Yeah, so like Chris Commons, who I don't know, God love him, how he lasted that 90 minutes, because after about 17 minutes, he was absolutely blown out his backside. He was knackered, and he was actually caught out a few times in the right side of midfield with Alba going in behind him. But he had a much better second half, and he did last the 90 minutes, unlike our fragile Swedish right back Lustig, who went off for Tony Watt. But yeah, so we had Commons on, and he absolutely lamps the ball up the pitch, and Mascherano's in trouble again, and he can't live with Tony Watt's pace. And that's something that was always confused me about Tony Watt, about how he didn't hold on to that sheer pace, because he totally ran the legs off Mascherano, who wasn't done by that point. And he's in behind, and I'm still not sure whether this is a foul. I thought at the time it was a foul, and if it's a foul, it's a red card. But watching it back, it looks like Watt has his hand on Mascherano. Mascherano has his hand on Watt. Tony Watt goes down. You know, Neil Lennon can't believe we've not been given the free kick, and Mascherano's been sent off. But it just looked like they were really spooked then. They were rattled, and I think any balls in behind, Tony Watt was convinced he was going to get in there. But yeah, he could potentially have stayed in his feet, and that would have been 3-0. But I think, you know, it was somewhere between a foul and not.
So when the Barcelona goal goes in, I remember the thought process, because I looked at my watch, I remember the thought process going through my mind of, well, at least we got a draw playing Barcelona. Because I just thought our players had done so much and had been so done in, and that goal came just because, obviously, the mental tiredness as well as the physical tiredness, and we just switched off for half a second to allow Messi to get in front of our defenders. Were you thinking similar, Ewan, or did you think we could still hold on and win the game?
No, I felt physically sick, Harry. I think as soon as that ball hits the net, you know, the illusion's broken, isn't it? That we can't be scored against in this game. And Forster, just the size of him as well, you think he's just not going to be beaten. And then they've worked, it's a fantastic goal, by the way, that they scored. They've worked the ball in the box with this one-touch pass. And it's quite similar to the Iniesta goal at the Nou Camp. And it's Fabregas to Iniesta to Fabregas, shoots Messi, and then he gets the rebound. And it's actually clever because he lifts it over Forster too. Forster goes down low to try and block it. Messi just lifts it over him. I didn't feel confident at all. I thought we'd be psychologically shot at that point too. And because it's 90 minutes on the clock, you know, as you say, that you're going to get added time. You're going to get additional time with at least 3 or 4 minutes. And yeah, I did feel, you know, can we please just hold on? Let's just get the ball out of play, go long, whatever we can do. But I know we'll go to Anthony probably towards the final whistle. But something that I'd forgotten about the game was that straight after Messi scores, the ball goes back to Wanyama from kickoff, and he hammers the ball down the pitch. And who's after it? Tony Watt again. And he gets a foul off Mascherano, and the whole place just relaxes a bit. You know, the ball is out, you know, of our half. We've got a free kick high up the pitch. We can try and take the ball in the corner. So I think, you know, you forget that Tony Watt's contribution in that game, obviously the main one is that, you know, historic goal that he scored that's the best in his career. But he also contributed in other ways. He really did run them ragged, and they had Mascherano on toast really for that period he was on the pitch.
So the last couple of moments, Anthony, through to the final whistle. Was anything of note happen at once it's 2-1? You know, that's one of the great things about the top teams. If they lost a goal at 2-1 with 90 minutes on the clock, nothing would have happened for the last 4 minutes. You saw that. You see that regularly. Anything of note happen in the final
four minutes? Not really. I think we do quite well to sort of close it out. You know, there's some other games where, you know, those 4 minutes seem to last a lot longer. But this one isn't really the case. You know, it's just everyone doing a shift. I think what's interesting is the, you know, just looking at the 11. I mean, you couldn't say. I mean, we've mentioned Joe Ledley in this whole thing, but on reality, you know, if you had a GPS on him that night, you know, he probably ran, you know, 20 miles. You know, and the same with Samaras, and even Commons. You know, it was a night about guys doing their jobs. I mean, Miku played 90 minutes. That's insane. You know, who remembers that? I just assumed he was hooked. But no, they all just run their guts out, and you know that's what they needed to do. So we do manage to reach the final whistle, but it's more sweat than ability on this occasion.
It was pretty frantic though, wasn't it? You know, even watching the last few minutes back in the game, you know, the crowd whistling, and you know, you can sense it, and I remember sensing it in the stands too, that the ball spent a lot of time around about our penalty area for those last few minutes. So I was never convinced until the whistle went, to be honest.
So how are you and your uncle at that final whistle?
Gosh, just, I was thinking, I remember thinking at the time, I was like, this is the best week of my life. I was like, how am I ever going to top this? Like, this is the thing. And do you know what? The final whistle, you're just thinking so many things. I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to be my 18th tomorrow. I'm going to go out with my pals all weekend, you know. I'm going to get it up all the Rangers fans in my classes. You know, it's just, everything is perfect at this point. Do you know, and just, it's a really special moment to be able to share with, you know, any family member. Like, loads of people remember this, listening, you know, going to this sort of game. You're never going to forget it. There was something kind of in the game that I'd watched back, like Gary Neville, I think, was doing the Sky studio coverage, and he was like, oh, people will remember this for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You know, you'll remember that forever. It's just remarkable. And the noise and the celebration and whatever else, it was just incredible. And just again, a few wee things that you pick up when you watch it back is, you know, the final whistle goes, and it goes, well, just before it goes, it ends with Victor Wanyama blutering the ball out of play after getting it off Iniesta. And, you know, it's totally fitting for the game itself. You know, it's remarkable because he was so exceptional all the way through. It ended with him knocking the ball out of play. But then the final whistle goes and Neil Lennon's like on his knees with his hands in his head, and Victor Wanyama's strolling about looking, he looks completely unfazed, doesn't seem to realise the magnitude of what he and the team have achieved. But yeah, it wasn't lost on us. We were absolutely delighted, and yeah, nobody wanted to go home that night.
So what did you do on the way home? What did you do? Did you just eventually get yourself home? One of the things I remember after that was I think I could have stayed. I don't know if I did, but I don't drink. I could have stayed up till 2-3 in the morning. I was just so wide awake. I also remember thinking, see, if we don't win at the weekend, I don't care, because if my adrenaline's like this and I'm just watching it, what's the adrenaline of those players like? So what were you up to?
Just because, again, it was going to be my 18th the next day, I was like, I had plans to get everybody through and stuff. But after the game, that kind of thought process goes completely out the window, doesn't it? So I'm going back to this. We're walking back to this flat because I had to leave my uncle. He had to drive back, and I was going back to this flat, and these boys who are not interested in football had to take an interest that night. You know, we had to stay up and have a few drinks and just enjoy it, really. I think it's a shame that I wasn't able to go out and enjoy the pubs and stuff, because it was really absolutely buzzing in the Gallagate and stuff. But I'm sure plenty of listeners will have been doing that afterwards. But no, it was walking home, just really basking in it with atmosphere, and then going back and enjoying it with the flatmates and really, you know, waiting to wake up in day 18 and watch the highlights again and listen to everything that went on with it. So yeah, nothing major in terms of going out, because I couldn't go out, not until the next day.
Anthony, what was your bar in Barcelona? I keep going to say bar in Barcelona because it's a much better alliteration to it. What was your bar in I know bar in Belfast is also alliteration, but you get my point. What was the bar in Belfast like?
It was superb. You know, my Catalan friends were all very magnanimous. I tried to be humble in victory.
And, when you're the best team in the world and you think you're still going to go on to win the Champions League, I suppose you can afford to be magnanimous.
Yeah, it's weird just thinking about it now. I think the chat seemed to be, if I recall correctly, they all to a man seemed to think, all right, well, this Wanyama guy's better than Alex Song. So it's odd to think that, you know, by the next season, Wanyama wouldn't go on to greater things, you know, after this signature performance than initially Southampton. You know, you'd have thought someone would have come in and bought him that were better than Southampton. But obviously he ends up again in a Champions League semi-final and final with Tottenham. So he gets there indirectly. But yeah, like you say, it was one of those nights that you can barely sleep. You know, you're just... You know, it's just messages to, you know, friends and loved ones, cousins, uncles, whatever, aunts, and just basking in it. It seems like a million years ago now. But yeah, it was. It's the irony that, you know, I just left Scotland. I moved to a new country, and everyone around me who hears I'm a Celtic fan think, "All right, they, you know, they're going deep in the Champions League. They're a real team." And here we are, you know, all these years later. it's the only way, you know. We've obviously had our moments, but certainly at this level, this seems like a different universe. It's very odd.
That's so, the thing too, isn't it? Sorry, Harry. I was, you know, in that period of time, 2012, you know, you should never match, you know, Celtic up with them. I know we're always in comparison with them, but at that point, they were in playing Brechin at Glebe Park in Forfar, and we were beating Barcelona 2-1 and looking like we were going to go far in the Champions League. And you just think about where things are now, but never mind, that's not what we're here to talk about. And I think, you know, there was a real romance about that result, wasn't there? You know, Barcelona, some Celtic fans don't feel this affinity with Barcelona, but I always did. And I think just because, you know, the Henrik Larsson connection, see, a hero of mine and everybody else growing up, he went to play there after us, you know, so he kind of always looked out for the results, and they played football in a certain way. And, you know, you were talking, Anthony, they probably were at the start of their decline. You know, it was after Pep Guardiola, they had Tito Villanova in charge. I think later that season, they were absolutely hammered by Bayern in the Champions League quarterfinals. But at the time, you know, even coming into that game, they'd won, you know, all of their, or they hadn't been beaten in 3 years away in the Champions League before that match. 3 years in the Champions League, no defeats until that game. Before they played us, they'd only dropped 2 points in the league. And they'd only been beaten by Real Madrid in the Super Cup. This was an absolutely phenomenal team, and I would persist, they're close to one of the best teams of all time. So to beat them, when you reflect on it later that night, you know, it's just, you think it can't ever be topped. And I just wonder, you know, hopefully it will be in our lifetimes, it will be topped, but it's just an absolutely remarkable result.
It will be topped in our lifetimes, I have confidence in that. But we were in the middle of a really strange run in the league at that point. We won one out of five games through October, end of October, and into the through November. In this period, we, as you mentioned, Anthony, we'd lost 2-0 at Kilmarnock. We drew 2-2 at Dundee United. Straight after this game, we were at home to St Johnstone and drew 1-1. We beat Aberdeen away 2-0, and then lose at home to Inverness Cali Thistle in the league. It was a really odd season. And obviously we it was a tight Champions League group as well. We drew at home to Benfica. We beat Spartak Moscow away 3-2. Only lost 2-1 at Barcelona at home. We beat Barcelona at home 2-1. We only lose 2-1 at Benfica away, and then we sneak past Spartak Moscow to get through the group stages of the Champions League, and then lose 3-0 at home and 2-0 away at Juventus, so it's all over in the next round. But it's a really odd season, that one, with this game right in the middle of it, and quite an incredible game, an incredible performance, and really setting you up for your 18th birthday, Ewan. Not many people can celebrate their 18th birthday with such an incredible Celtic game just immediately before it.
No, you're right enough. I mean, I couldn't believe, like, you know, the week that it had landed on. I was like, oh, this game's landed on the day before my birthday. I'm going to be set up for a good one regardless, getting to it. And then to win it, you know, against, you know, the predictions and the odds was just remarkable. And it set me up for a great weekend. You know, you had not long started uni. You get your pals through for the weekend. You get to go out and stuff and not worry about, you know, ID and things like that and be turned away. So it was absolutely amazing. You mentioned Tannadice there, though. I was actually at Tannadice on the Sunday beforehand, and yeah, you didn't have any kind of inkling that we were going to, you know, produce that kind of performance, particularly with the players we had missing after the result at Tannadice, where I think it was Effie Ambrose that headed the ball on the back of his net with about a minute to go to make us draw 2-2. But yeah, it was a great time to be 18 and just be turned 18. And, you know, I think it was a peculiar season. I think on the Sunday we drew 1-1 with St Johnstone, didn't we, and Tony Watt scored. And I think the thing to say is that it was quite a quick disappearance with Tony Watt after scoring that goal. You know, he had a few, you know, more appearances in the league, and then very quickly he wasn't fancied again. But to answer your question, it was just an absolutely phenomenal week for me personally. You know, we'd be able to share that with family too and friends over the weekend. You just, as you said, Anthony, as well, you just blasting it the whole time, and it's just one of these results that feels kind of generational. And yeah, hopefully, Harry, it won't be too much longer before we can top it, as you say.
And this was one of these nights that the tributes to the team, the tributes to the club, and the tributes to the fan, fans just kept flying through. Marker.com, there is perhaps no greater home pitch advantage in all of football than a Celtic home match at Celtic Park, as Barcelona learned the hard way in their Wednesday night Champions League defeat. Villanova, I don't like to lose, but if we have to lose, let it be this way. I have been lucky in my career to have been in many grounds, but I have never seen anything like it. And it was just an incredible performance, and again, Paul Hayward in the Daily Telegraph, I think, sums up what many football fans dislike about the money focused element of the Champions League, because these teams want Celtic in it. They want what we produce. When he says, somewhere between madness and love, this fanaticism did for Barcelona on a night when the Celtic team and their disciples were indivisible. Money can't buy you that. So, Anthony, you missed it. you missed it, but you enjoyed it in a bar in Belfast. So, if you get with Barcelona fans around you, so I suppose if you're going to miss it, you had a fantastic coming of age at 18. It was an incredible night. Anything anyone else wants to say before I draw this episode of the game to the close?
Just a daft observation as always. I think it was one of the great Celtic kits. I really liked this kit. It was Lisbon-esque, but with slightly thinner hoops, which I've mentioned it before. Domestically, they wore it with black socks. And after Christmas, they binned the black socks. But in Europe, they never wore the black socks. I'm not sure what the decision for that was. So, all the great pictures of Tony Watt and Wanyama on this night, it just looks like a perfect Celtic kit. And Dani Alves rocking the snood, which would become banned by FIFA soon afterwards because of the potential dangers of wearing a snood while doing sport, I guess.
Ewan, do you get any final abiding memory of the game?
Not to do with snoods, but I'd forgotten he'd worn a snood, Dani Alves, but there you go. No, I suppose abiding memory, just the support. And I think in this time where we're just seeing fans starting to filter back into grounds, you know, we've got reduced capacity for the games coming up against Dundee, I think, and moving forward with the Europa League qualifiers. But it did prove, and I think you've said in the articles that are written afterwards in Marca, etc., you know, the power of the supporter. And I think, you know, we've got that advantage. That advantage isn't going away with the Celtic support, the noise, the backing that it gives the team. And I think the lift that it can provide, it can't be overstated. And as much as we've gone even further towards a really moneyed game of football where, you know, clubs like Barcelona are now in an absolutely horrendous situation financially because they've overspent and stretched themselves, and that gap's gotten bigger between us and them even further. You know, having that support is not something that's going to go away anytime soon. And once we get all of us back in the ground, you know, we'll have more nights like this. And yeah, it was just, I think, finally just an absolute pleasure to be able to go to a game like that, you know, 60,000 tickets, to be one of those 60,000 people where we've got, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, of Celtic fans around the world, even more maybe. It was a total honour and a privilege. And it's actually, when you watch it back, just to say it was quite emotional watching that game back. I thought, you know, on YouTube, and it brought back the memories of it, and the colour, the noise, it was just remarkable. So that's probably my final thoughts on it, really.
And with that, I will say, Ewan McLean and Anthony Murray, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Harry.
Open Gangnam Style. That was Ewan McLean joining Anthony and myself to reminisce about the 1-2-5 game. Next time, we will have Thomas Hanlon discussing this man's last match.
I can't even speak. It's been fantastic years, and I mean, it's been tremendous for me all the years here. And it's just great to be part of something special like this. And I started swinging at everything at one stage here today, but fortunately, I got one. The first one, great ball from Tomo. The second one, great ball from Agat. And once you made the first one, you don't miss the second.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Op, 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 op. Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Op, 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 op. Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Op, 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 op. Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Op, 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 op. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Hey, sexy lady.
Op, 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 op. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Hey, sexy lady.
Op, 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 op. Being a norm, could we be not a norm? Baby, baby, not a more, jump, I don't know. Being a norm, could we be not a norm? Baby, baby, not a more, jump, I don't know. Yo, what I'm saying? Oppan Gangnam Style.
Hey, sexy lady.
Op, 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 op. Oppan Gangnam Style.
Hey, sexy lady.
Oppan Gangnam Style.